Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 407 of the podcast. And it is Friday, 14th of December, 2018. As I record this in Auckland, New Zealand, and I'm actually sitting in the hire car because it's the only quietish place I can find to record, as we're on a family trip and family is noisy. So I am looking out onto very sunny garden, and the birds are flying around, and it's actually really nice to be in the warm and the sun and away from the cold of the northern winter. So not a bad deal at all. So today I'm talking about the indie author mindset with Adam Croft. And Adam has some really great, strong opinions about KU versus wide, which is always refreshing to talk about, as well as how to use advertising to best effect. And of course, lots of mindset things around success and professionalism and all kinds of things. So that is coming up. In publishing news, probably the most exciting news, at least to me and hopefully to lots of you as we move into 2019, is Findaway Voices have added Storytel to their distribution network. Now, I've talked about Storytel before on the show, probably more when I did a few solo shows earlier this year, but basically, if you think Audible is the biggest, I'm not even sure if Storytel has overtaken Audible now, but Storytel is aggressively going after all the countries where Audible is not the dominant player. So they have, they're expanding across the world. They do have a subscription model, so an unlimited listening platform, and for a monthly payment. And for authors, it is the pool subscription model. So I guess a bit like the KU model for audio. But essentially, you can be, if you are non-exclusive with audio, you can go with Findaway and get onto Storytel. So a quote from the blog post on findawayvoices.com says, many of the countries where Storytel operates have established themselves as audio-first digital book markets, where listening is the preferred and most popular way to enjoy a digital book. If your ebook hasn't performed well in some of these regions, you might find surprising success with your audiobook. Now, I've talked about this kind of audio-first or voice first movement or sort of change that seems to be happening. Whereas I'm in New Zealand, certainly New Zealand, Australia, UK, US, Canada, you know, we all went ebook first and then audiobooks have come second. But what we're going to see in these other markets, especially as I've been reading a lot about the 5G rollout. The 5G stuff is, I mean, this is a bit futurist and a bit off topic, but I've just read an FT article about 5G, and it's not like, iPhone 6 to iPhone 7. It's a massive jump. The 5G network is going to enable a lot of the things that we've been talking about in the futurist things, the self-driving cars, the VR, AR, AI, all of this stuff will be driven by 5G. And so when you think about how streaming speeds have meant the growth of podcasting and audiobooks, I think that Storytel is going to be one of the big, is one of the big players already. And I am super excited to get more books onto Storytel. So I'm very much changing the way I do audio now with the non-exclusivity so that I can get to these other markets. So thanks to Findaway Voices for speeding that up. And I predict more audio news coming in hopefully the next month. So I'll keep letting you know about it. Another interesting article on Publishers Weekly about Ingram in a rumored bid to buy Baker & Taylor. And this is interesting. And this article is a kind of warning article saying Booksellers and publishers alike express concerns about the possible loss of another wholesale and distribution option. But of course, for indie authors, those of us using Ingram Spark, this could be a real bonus. Now, you can get to Baker & Taylor through other services. Don't quote me on this, but I think Drafter Digital are now doing Baker & Taylor. And they have strength in the library market. Well, Ingram has worked... Ingram's strength is in the trade wholesaling, and it's the largest distributor of independent presses. So together, there'll be a really interesting force. But of course, publishers are worried that it will make things more expensive, maybe. But we shall see. But interesting conglomeration as markets change. And then finally, in the publishing news section, a really interesting article on publishing perspectives from Richard Charkin, who is a longtime UK publishing guy and is doing some interesting articles once a month. And his is a list of don'ts for publishers and a couple for 2019. It's kind of the year ahead. Don't do these things. And it's interesting because it gives you a glimpse into the publishing business, you know, the publishing companies, that we are not those publishing companies. But I always find it interesting to read this stuff. And there were a couple of don'ts that I thought were relevant for us. So he says, don't overcomplicate the business. It is complicated enough already. I cannot imagine that any other industry has so much complexity for such relatively small revenue. This still makes me laugh because I do catch myself sometimes agonizing over this, that, or the other, and then I realize that I'll only make $2 from it or something. And it's like, stop it. 80-20 rule. What is the 80%? Sorry, what is the 20% that gives the 80% return? So yeah, if you feel like, and I know we all do feel overwhelmed, and just something to think about, and I've got a few things for you to think about, but this is one of them. How can you stop overcomplicating your author business? How can you stop doing some things so that you can focus on the important stuff? And of course, for us as author entrepreneurs, it is writing for sure. That is our most important thing. And sometimes the rest of it can just fall away. The other funny thing he writes is, don't print as many copies as you think you can sell. Print as many as you know you will sell, and don't underprice your books. They're all great value. So I thought this was interesting because, of course, we generally don't print copies unless we are doing bulk sales, which I've talked about before, or if you are doing a short print run, and maybe you have colours or, you know, interesting books that you need to do a print run for. But mostly we're using print on demand. So it was more the don't underprice your books thing that I think is important for us to think about as we go forward. Especially, I mean, as I've been doing these hardback editions in the last month, you know, hardback editions are more expensive, and it kind of makes me go, ooh, like $25, that's quite expensive. But then I realize that a $25 hardback makes my ebook price look awesome. So I may even be putting up my ebook prices because I now have some really good comparison prices. So thinking about that at the moment. So my personal update, well, as I mentioned, I am in Auckland. And if you want to see my pictures, you can go to instagram.com/JFPenAuthor. And I've been sharing some over the last couple of days. This is a family trip. And I'm not going to share too much, but this is a family health trip. So obviously, our parents are all getting older. If you're my age, 43, you start moving into the parental care time of your life. So that is what we're doing here. Thanks to all of you who are saying, hope you're having a wonderful holiday. I am having a nice break, but let's say it's not so much a holiday as a supportive trip. My husband is a New Zealander. I am, in fact, also a New Zealander. I lived here for 7 years and I have a passport. I'm a citizen. Although we left, gosh, when did we leave? 2006. I think we left New Zealand, moved to Australia, and then moved obviously back to the UK. But anyway, lots has changed. If you know New Zealand, I used to live in Devonport. And we're actually heading over to Devonport today. And I love the view there out to the sea. I'm really enjoying being by the sea, actually, because of course, Bath in the UK is well, landlocked. We do have a river and a canal though, so I get my water element in, but it is lovely being by the sea. And I've been really interesting to come back and notice a few things. You know, I've been talking about China, and one of my big picks for holiday reading is AI Superpowers by Dr. Kai-Fu Lee, and also reading about the 5G network and the Huawei thing. But what I've noticed, we went shopping. Our luggage went missing, which I will talk about again in a minute. But we went to buy some stuff because we had to buy stuff. And when you pay, you could pay with your, you know, normal credit card, but you can also pay with WeChat or Alipay, both of which are the Chinese mobile first payment options. But of course, WeChat is more than that. It's like a sort of magic app that does everything. So I was really interested to see that, because we do not have that in the UK at the moment. Well, certainly not in Bath, and I didn't see it in London. So really interesting to, it must be in London, but fascinating to see that here. So yes, other things. Our luggage did in fact go missing. We left on Friday and we got our luggage back on Wednesday. So there was some pain in that, especially because it's Christmas and we had all the Christmas presents. And I was like, oh no, I've spent so long picking out Christmas presents for nieces and nephews and stuff like that. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to lose the luggage because of that. But it was very interesting because we ended up really buying some essentials, obviously things like toiletries. I had to go find contact lenses because I didn't bring enough in my hand luggage and stuff like that. But when we thought about what we really needed and what I need to run the business day to day, it really is just what I have with me right now in this car is a laptop, which is a MacBook Pro 13-inch, so it's quite small and portable. And I've got the ATR 2100 microphone, which is pretty portable. And I've got my smartphone, I've got a Wi-Fi connection, and I read on my phone and on my Kindle. So I had those with me. And because I'm not much of a shopper, you know, I was happy with just a few changes of clothes. So it was really good to kind of stop and go, right, what do we really need to A, be happy, and B, run a business? And again, reflecting on being in New Zealand, as I have talked about before, I ran a scuba diving business when I lived in New Zealand. And boy, was that massive overheads. If you ever find yourself complaining about the author life being expensive, try running a business with a boat where the price of fuel changes every day, and staff and equipment, like lots of physical equipment and catering, and the weather goes bad. Oh, goodness me. That was a hard, hard business. So hard, in fact, we folded it very quickly. But the point there is really that we don't need much as authors to run our businesses, to write our books, to publish our books, to market our books. You really just need a computer and some kind of Wi-Fi connection, which is just awesome. So I'm very grateful about that, and grateful that I can come over here, support our family, and still do business stuff. So that's cool. And also, I was thinking about, a number of people have said to me when I do these types of trips, they say, oh, I always wish I could go to New Zealand, or I always wish I could, or even when I was in America, you know, people would say, oh, I always wish I could go to New Orleans or to New York or San Francisco or wherever. And Auckland, London to Auckland probably is the furthest you can possibly fly. It is the opposite side of the world. It's an even longer journey if your plane gets rerouted and your baggage lost. But it is doable. And all you do is you put it in your schedule. You just go, right, I want to go to New Zealand. And you say, right, how much do I need to save? I will put down a deposit, because this is the nice thing about most travel. You can put down a deposit, so then you don't lose much if you have to cancel for some reason. And then you book it and then you go. And certainly somewhere like New Zealand is not difficult. It's a very easy country to be in, very easy country to be a traveller, and a great place, you know, it's a really awesome place. So I wanted also to challenge you on this as well. As I said, family health challenges here and thinking about what are the things you want to do in your life? What are the places you want to visit? What are the books you want to write? What are the things you want to do? And let's not put them off because life is short. And if you put them in the diary, put them in your schedule, and then just get on with making it happen. Stop making excuses because, yeah, life is short. And I will be talking about this more in the new year when I do my sort of 2019 post, which will be New Year's Day. But yeah, if you don't block out the time, it will not happen. So let's focus on that for thinking about the next year. So as ever, thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments and everything. Just a couple here. Kirsten Lillis says, sometimes I feel myself wishing it was Monday so I'd have a new episode to listen to. Good thing there's a huge backlist I can revisit. Thank you, Kirsten. That was lovely. Hamor Biker says, your podcast of December 3rd, which I think was my solo show, is so full of positive vibes, especially by reminding us that change can be good and mistakes are learning opportunities. Oh, thank you. And Rachel Amphlett, and Rachel's very successful crime writer, said, really enjoyed the conversation with Yarrow Starak. Thank you. And yeah, I know the conversation with Yarrow was kind of advanced, but this is what I feel about my place in the indie author podcast sphere. I feel like there are a lot of podcasts now for offering advice for new authors, but maybe not so many offering thoughts on the next steps in the journey. So I hope to continue being here for you guys as we all move forward. So today's show is sponsored by Draft Digital, and I'll play a word from the lovely and dulcet tones of Kevin Tomlinson in a minute. I can't even do an impression. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Marianne Jacobson, Callie Bird, Author Packages, Richard Phillips, Lisa A. Murray and Bonnie Lacey. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And remember, it's just a coffee a month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous, and you can support the show and get the extra monthly Q&A audio with lots of backlist. So if you want more audio listening for your holiday season, support the show on Patreon and you will get a ton more audio. Right, thank you everybody. Here is a word from our sponsor and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi, this is Kevin Tomlinson with Draft Digital, bringing you the D2D Smart Author Tip number 3. Look, we know that marketing your books is one of the toughest parts of an author career. That's one of the reasons we built our Universal Book Links, or as we call them, UBLs. With a UBL, you can create a single, solitary link that will send your readers to everywhere your book is sold online. With a D2D account, you can customize your UBL to make it easier to remember and even add affiliate links from Amazon, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Google, and even Smashwords. I know, right? UBLs are evergreen, meaning you can update them with a single click anytime your book appears in a new storefront online. Since they're always up to date, you can use them on business cards, mailers, even in blog posts, social media posts, mentions on podcasts. That's a thing, right? And if you'd like to reach the widest possible audience, be sure to use Draft Digital's free ebook distribution to major online retailers worldwide, including Apple iBooks, Kobo, Tolino, and more. Start reaching a bigger audience now. Convert your manuscript, distribute it online, and get the support you need the whole way at draftdigital.com/pen.
Today, I'm back with Adam Croft. Hi, Adam.
Hello. Lovely to be back again.
Yes, back again. Third time over, what, six years, I think, now?
Yeah, I think that's probably right, yeah.
About right, yeah. So just a little introduction in case people have missed the previous episodes. Adam is the international best-selling author of crime novels and psychological thrillers. He has now started a non-fiction series for authors, and today we're talking about the indie author mindset, which is a topic close to both of our hearts. So Adam, I did want to ask straight up, like, you're quite well-known in the indie community now for
ads, for Facebook ads, BookBub ads, other forms of paid advertising. Why go straight into a book on mindset as opposed to some of the more technical aspects of publishing?
Well, two reasons, really. One of them is that I realized that advertising and online marketing changes so quickly that by the time I'd written the book about my tips and strategies, that 90% of them would be out of date. And for me, I don't really fancy updating a book every 5 minutes. So I do give those tips. I've got a Facebook group called The Indie Author Mindset, and I do weekly live videos and post things in there. So that's where all of that stuff happens. But the books I wanted to kind of be evergreen. And also it's the fact that the success that I had with ads and with online marketing wasn't because I learned how to use ads and do online marketing. The basis of that and the foundations for that were my shift in mindset. So it made a lot more sense to start at the point where my career started, really, or where my success started, which was that shift in my way of thinking.
Really good point. And in terms of updating nonfiction, this is genius. I wish I'd have thought of that originally. I only learned that the hard way. And of course, my book, How to Market a Book, is now third edition. And hilariously, it's at this point, it's a year old, the third edition. And people are already like, where's the fourth edition? And I'm just desperate to retire that. Because yeah. Like you say, it's the mindset stuff. It lasts. Whereas the technical stuff changes almost every blooming week.
Yeah, and it all comes full circle, because that's the reason that mindset works, is because it's evergreen, because it lasts, because it's long term. You know, these principles aren't about kind of quick, short term gold rushes. It's about things that have been tried and tested since the early days of independent publishing and before that, and which come from other industries and from kind of business theory and psychology in general. So these are things that haven't changed, and hopefully, because I don't want to update the book, won't change.
No, I agree with you. So let's get into the book. So the first section is around expectations, which I really like, because I get emails every day. I'm sure now you have people in your group and things. People still have unrealistic expectations. Like I had a comment on my blog the other day. This person said, I am so angry because someone, whoever it wasn't me, told me that I could, make a living with one book on Amazon. And I'm like, yeah, I never said that. So what are some of the other unrealistic expectations that authors have about going indie or about being a full-time writer in general?
I think people do see the outliers, and there are people who have had success with one book. But you know, we can't all be Harper Lee, and she wasn't indie either. So we'll nip that one in the bud. But yeah, you do get. I do get a lot of emails. I do get a lot of comments, and they vary massively. But at the core, does seem to be a mindset thing and the wrong way of thinking about things. I mean, people even in emails to me refer to me as having been this overnight success that had everything with one book. And yeah, it was one book, but it was my ninth book. And that's the difference. It wasn't this overnight thing. It wasn't the first one that I put out there. And I've had ones since which haven't been as successful. I've had some that have been more successful. That's how the business works. It's there are a lot of misconceptions. I mean, to be honest with you, there's a lot of people who I speak to who don't even really understand what self-publishing is. They've paid money out, or they've used, vanity presses. They don't really understand what the process is, or they think because it's, the term self-publishing, which I don't like, because there's no self about it. You are a team of people. You have to have editors, you have to have cover designers, you have to have other people you rely on, you have to have promotional sites that you're using, all of these different things. There's no self there. So I think even within the industry and within people who have published a book or two, there's a lot of misconceptions. I honestly wouldn't know where to begin listing them.
Well, I guess you do in the book, but
I do. Yeah, buy the book. That's the right answer.
I would say one of the other misconceptions. So again, I've had traditionally published authors. We both, being in the UK, we know quite a few people in the genre. What's interesting is some traditionally published authors are starting to go indie now. And again, I hear one thing from newbie writers and then another thing from the established writers, which is, I thought it was easy to self-publish.
Yeah, that's one thing it's definitely not. It's extremely rewarding. Mm. It can be extremely rewarding. And, you know, if you do things the right way, probably will be. But it will take time and it will take a lot of effort. And you know, thankfully, I don't mind those things. It is a long-term thing. Again, it all comes back to mindset. It all comes back to thinking of the long term, which I know is something that you're a fan of too.
Mm. So something I used to think, I used to truly believe that everyone could be an entrepreneur. And I think we have to be entrepreneurial to be successful as running our own business, which is what we're really talking about. And then I kind of realized that not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. And I feel like that's part of what you're saying as well about the mindset. So you used to be a playwright, or I guess maybe you still are, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, and I like to bring that up because I think it's quite an unusual background. And
I keep that bit quiet. But yes.
No, I love it.
Just put it on the biggest, you know, indie book podcast in the world. That's fine.
Well, I love it because I think that's evidence of a change. So let's talk about your mindset rather than everyone else's. So how did you go from being a playwright, which, let's face it, doesn't have, you know, massive income-related possibilities, to No. being able to market a book like Her Last Tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I've written plays before and after and still do. I mean, yeah, you're right. They're not commercially successful. They're not, you know, thrillers. They're nothing to do with the books that I write. They're a completely different thing altogether. And I think my last royalty check, bear in mind, they're for 6 months at a time. I think my last one that I received earlier this year was £2.63.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's I've got the Bentley on order. It's... I mean, they are a hobby thing for me. They are something that I enjoy doing. I know I'm not going to make money from them, but it's something that I want to write. And for a lot of people, that is why they write. For some people, they want to make money from it. They want it to be a career. And for that, yeah, you're right. You do have to have that entrepreneur mindset. You have to realize that you are a business person as well as a creative person. And you've got to have both of those sides of your brain on it, either at the same time or at the right times. But I mean, even if you go with a traditional publisher now, you do have to have some entrepreneurial nous about you. You're going to have to do some of the marketing, probably most of it. You're going to have to do quite a lot of the things that traditional publishers used to do and now don't. Mm. So I don't think there's any real getting away from it. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a hell of a lot more entrepreneurial if you're an indie. But you know, if you want to be an author and if you want to sell books, then there really is no getting away from it. And of course, for a lot of people, they just want to write books. They love writing and they're not really bothered if people read them or if they sell. And that's fine too. It depends why you're doing it. For me, this is a job. It's my wife's job as well. It's my family income. It's what I need to do. I need to sell some books. And I've gone off on a tangent again. I can't remember your original question, which is something I tend to do quite a lot.
Well, I think it often comes back to your reason why you're doing things. And, you know, I remember when, you know, you said you were having a baby and you were, you know, your wife was leaving her job. And so you have good reasons that drive you into this kind of entrepreneurial sense. But coming back to the book, you talk about professionalism. So how do you define professionalism when it comes to being an indie?
Well, I think I come very much from the Stephen Pressfield school on this one. It's about sitting down and doing it as a job. I think if you want it to be your job, you have to treat it as a job. You know, it's similar to saying, you know, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. And you need to treat writing as if it is your job. You need to sit down at the allotted times, get the work done. You know, there's a lot of people who push it to the back and other things have to come first, and they do writing in their spare time or if they've got time left over at the end of the day, and we all know that just doesn't happen. So I think prioritizing it, mm-hmm. if it's something you want to do and it's something you've got a calling to do, then that's what you have to do. So you know, I sit down at my desk in the morning, I work until lunchtime, I have lunch, and I then carry on working, and it's what I do. It's my job. I have to do that. you know, nobody else has the luxury of saying, I don't feel inspired to do my work today. I'm not going to turn up. It has to be done. And I think for me, it's that kind of kick up the backside and realizing that this is my job. Mm. That for me is what professionalism is about. It's not about whether you earn money from it or whether it's, you know, something you're doing alongside another job. If it's having that respect within yourself for what you do and for your writing.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And most people listening won't be doing this full time. But one of the biggest things that people say is, I don't have the time to write. And I think, as you're saying, part of professionalism is making the time. It's like, yeah, this is what I do.
Well, if you have the time for other things, you can find the time for writing as well. You can either, you know, work out what's most important to you, put them in a hierarchy. And if writing's near the top, then it needs to be the same with the amount of time that you're spending on it. Yeah, when you say, oh, I can't find the time to write, that is still in that old mindset of, you know, you don't need to find the time. The time should be allotted because it's a priority of yours.
So when you and I met back in the dark ages a few years ago, it was like the split in the author community was very much sort of traditional publishing versus indie publishing. And now I feel as if the most discussed split is really KU versus wide. So I wonder what your current thoughts are on these sort of distinctions.
Well, I mean, my view has been for a long time that it's far better to be wide. It's that is it's long-term and short-term thinking. You know, there is a bit of a KU gold rush, or has been for some people. But I don't think it makes business sense in any industry to rely absolutely on one customer, you know, or to have all of your eggs in one basket, especially if that basket's got lots of holes in it and the handle sometimes falls off. As we've been seeing, you know, recently, a lot of people who are in KU or have heavy stock in Amazon in terms of their sales have been having some big problems recently and seen some massive drops in sales. I haven't. I know that, you know, a lot of other people who, such as yourself, who have got much higher market shares in other vendors haven't been as widely affected because we don't rely that heavily on Amazon. So, yeah, that's... You know, I hate to say, no, I told you so. But but yeah, this is one of the reasons why I've been banging the wide drum for so long, because it just makes sense. You know, there are very few businesses that rely just on one customer, and that, you know, if that customer has issues, then you're going to have big knock-on issues as well.
Mm. No, obviously, I agree with you, and I'm wide as well. It's just one of those things that a lot of people... I think it goes back to the expectations, because if people are in KU, I've had an email as well that said, I'm worried that if I pull my books from KU, I won't be able to replace my income next month. And I said,
No, exactly.
And I said, no, you won't. So
you're right. Yeah.
With the expectations around wide, what would you say around wide, around people considering pulling out of KU? How long are we talking about? What, you know, what should they be focusing on?
But general consensus is kind of 6 months to a year. But I mean, this is this thing where people quite often, a lot of the industry experts say, well, in the early days, if you're a new author, you should start off in KU, then you can build an audience and then you can look at going wide. And that makes no sense whatsoever, because once you've built an audience and they are an audience of KU readers, you're then putting the plug on that audience that you spent a year or two building up. And you've then got to start again. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to do that, for exactly the same reasons as you laid out there. The fact that there are people who are worried about losing that income, and they will do for months and for years on end. So, you know, why bother with that first step? If you're going to have to build up an audience on these other platforms anyway, as well as Amazon, then do that from the start and get all your ducks in a row right from the beginning. It just doesn't make any sense to build up an audience and then just slice half of it off overnight and start again building up people to replace it. In fact, if you are getting ready to publish your first book, that is exactly the time you should be going wide. I mean, I would argue that it's always the time to go wide, but yeah, for new authors, it's just a no-brainer.
Well, I'll come back on that, because I think that often when people have their first book, they are learning so much. And I feel that to actually publish a book and to market a book effectively on multiple channels. And for me now, that includes, you know, places like Ingram Spark and Publish Drive, as well as Kobo and Apple and all of that. To learn all of that at once can be daunting, which is why I tend to say to people who are freaking out, you know, just focus on one platform. Get to know how to do things like set up your email list and then move slowly. Also, I feel that a lot of people write one book and one book doesn't necessarily do much at all. So writing another book is possibly the place to go. But I think both of those things are worth thinking about to people listening.
Yeah, I mean, by all means, focus on Amazon at first and get used to that before you start spreading your wings. But you don't need to do that in KU. You don't need to set up and cultivate an audience and then cut them off after a few months. You can build up an audience non-exclusively, be only on Amazon, but don't tick that KDP select box. There's no need to do that. And then when you do want to, you know, when you are comfortable, when you want to put your books on Kobo or Apple Books or Google Play or wherever, all you need to do then is upload it. You don't need to worry about getting to the end of your exclusivity period or emailing them and begging to come out of it. You don't need to worry about losing readers. You will only be building on what you've already got. There will be no worry or risk of losing anything. You will only be building on what you've already established. So it makes sense to me to do things that way.
Yeah. Okay, great. And okay. So let's talk about Amazon, because you had this hugely successful book, Her Last Tomorrow, sold like so many copies, bought the jet, et cetera, et cetera. And then you were picked up by Amazon Publishing or APUB. Obviously, you can't necessarily tell us everything, but you're not with APUB anymore. And so I wondered, like, when people think that the dream is to get picked up by Amazon or other traditional publishers, and APUB is basically a traditional publisher. So what are your kind of lessons learned or thoughts on traditional publishing versus indie for you personally?
Well, it was an interesting experiment. And there were some positives from it as well. But, you know, generally speaking, what it comes down to is that I wasn't selling as many books or making as much money as I would be doing it myself. And one of the things that really kind of hammered that home for me, and, you know, thankfully for them as well, was in January. I had a book out which I'd self-published called Tell Me I'm Wrong, and I did the same thing as I'd done with Her Last Tomorrow. I advertised that heavily through Facebook, and it became even more successful than Her Last Tomorrow and outsold, I think, Her Last Tomorrow at that point was 2.5 years old. And I think within about 3 months, Tell Me I'm Wrong, I'd already outsold it. So that for me said, okay, I can still do this on my own, far more successfully than APUB did. But, you know, it's not to say that, you know, it was all bad. Of course it wasn't. You know, I had a Kindle first on Only the Truth, which was my only kind of solely APUB book. Her Last Tomorrow, they republished and relaunched on their platform. You know, that hit number one in the US, hit number one in the UK, all over the world. And briefly, I was ranked as the most widely read author in the world on Amazon, and J.K. Rowling was number two.
Yay, screen print.
So yeah, immediate screen grab. In fact, the screen grab I have of that is one that somebody else sent to me because I hadn't even noticed. Because my
it's
son
often
was
like
about
2 a.m. right when that happened.
Well, yeah, my son was a week and a half away from being born as well, so we had a few things that we were kind of focusing on, and that you know, all of that stuff that happened in that couple of weeks is, even though that was, you know, one of my most successful periods, it was just doesn't even kind of factor in my mind at that point. It's very, very strange. So yeah, there were lots of great things. You know, it's very enlightening working with their editors as well, and some of the feedback that I got there, and there are things that I've kind of bear in mind now when I'm writing my books. But yeah, it's just not for me. The process was, as you say, pretty much like the traditional side of things. So it was a very slow process. There was months and months and months of preparing for a book launch, which, you know, obviously publishers argue is necessary. I argue I've done 23 times and have never managed to make it last any longer than a month. So I'm not quite sure how you're managing to stretch it out over a year. But yeah, it was just something that didn't work for me. I'm, You know, my mindset is very much that I get books written, I get them out, I market them effectively, I do all of these different things. And, you know, that we didn't overlap in as many ways as would have been good for a long-term publishing relationship. But yeah, certainly no, you know, no bad blood anyway, not from my side. But yeah, not for me, and not something that I would do again. I've always said kind of privately to people that, you know, in order to take a traditional publishing deal, the first offer on the table would have to be an advance minimum six figures. Otherwise, there's no point. It's just no point.
Yeah, it's interesting. And to me, it often feels like traditional publishers become interested in indies when they're very successful, by which time those people know what to do anyway.
Yeah.
So it is quite an interesting thing, really.
It is. And, you know, they did kind of open me up to a huge new market. And, you know, Only the Truth sold hundreds of thousands of copies. And as I say, number one all over the world. But I get very, very few people emailing me who tell me that was the book they discovered me through. So a lot of people obviously bought the book and, you know, have kind of not carried on and not stuck with me, or, you know, perhaps haven't read it, perhaps because it was the Kindle first, you know, offering that month, and they got it discounted or free or whatever. You know, the vast majority of people still say they've discovered me through either Her Last Tomorrow or Tell Me I'm Wrong. So, you know, that says to me that it's not just about sheer sales numbers. It's about those readers then sticking with you, then getting onto your mailing list and buying your future books. It's about the long-term thing. You know, that number one was great, but I haven't got it anymore. I'm not still a number one. So there's no point in me sort of making a song and dance over that. It's about what happens now and where I'm going to be in 5 years' time, or where I'm going to be in 10 years' time.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's really interesting. So I did want to talk about ads, because you mentioned ads. And you've certainly talked about Facebook advertising. You've talked about BookBub advertising, particularly for going wide, and which I really like and have been doing based on your tips on BookBub ads. Because, of course, BookBub do things like target Google Play and places where you can't go. But I wondered, like, what are your current thoughts on ads? You know, many people do feel that, say, BookBub is not as effective. You know, Amazon ads, interesting things going on. Facebook ads, expensive. So what are your thoughts on sort of what's going on right now?
Generally speaking, Amazon ads are good if you're targeting Amazon readers, and BookBub ads are good if you're not. Generally speaking, Amazon targeting doesn't work as well with BookBub ads. I don't actually do it at all. I target only the other vendors because I get much better click-through rates and, you know, almost consistently turn a profit doing that. So I personally don't advertise to Amazon on BookBub. It does still work. I still do it daily. I'm still using AMS as well, or Amazon Advertising, I think they've now geniusly rebranded it as. And that still works very well for selling books on Amazon without being in KU. So, yeah, all the methods are still working. It's just that the way that we learn to use them has changed. So what works is different. It's not that the platforms don't work. It's that doing the old things we used to do on those platforms doesn't work. I was listening to something the other day when somebody mentioned that, you know, adverts and copy and styles of ads and things need to be changing, particularly on Facebook, kind of once a month, because, you know, users just get used to seeing the same things over and over again. You know, love action hero A, meet my hero, and, you know, picture of man walking away over bridge in silhouette. You know,
It's a Mark Dawson book.
Just tuned out completely as soon as I see that, because I've seen it hundreds of times. I don't know one book from the other. It's, fair enough. It's this kind of familiarity theory and things that that designers talk about. But so you know what you're getting, but what you're getting is nothing new and nothing that's going to stand out. And then Facebook particularly, you need to stand out. People don't go on Facebook to buy a book. They go on there to tell people where they've been today, or to look at pictures of other people's dinners or cats and, you know, all the other useful stuff that's on Facebook. So you need to stop them in their tracks and catch their eye somehow. So making your ads look like every other ad out there, no matter how successful that ad is not going to work. It's a case of standing out. On BookBub and with AMS, you don't have that same pressure because people are on, well, BookBub particularly, they are there to buy books. They have literally just opened an email that says, here are some books. Mm-hmm. And they've scrolled to the bottom of that and looked at all the books on there before they've even seen your ads. So they are mega, mega hot leads. AMS, similarly, not quite as much because they could have accidentally ended up on a book page and Amazon has got, you know, lots of other things. And depending on how broad your keywords are, your ads could end up on unrelated pages. But still, the same kind of truth applies. And the thing on BookBub as well is people don't realize that you don't need, the same cost per click in terms of how low it needs to be as you do on Facebook. On Facebook, say, your target is, say, 20 cents in order to make a profit. On BookBub, that could easily, you could still be turning a profit with 50, 60 cent clicks because those people are far more likely to convert into buyers anyway. You're going to be seeing more than your usual kind of 5, 10% benchmark. Yeah, these are super hot leads that are going to your book. So you're more likely to convert more of them. There's a lot more wiggle room there with BookBub.
Yeah, I agree with you. I did want to ask on BookBub, I have had a lot less success with advertising full price books. And it seems like they're trying to move into that. But that's just bombed for me because I think they've trained their audience into discounting. Now, we're recording in November 2018. That may have changed in 6 months. They may have recruited a new full price audience. But are you seeing anything there? Does it have to be discounted for BookBub?
Well, there's no getting away from the fact that discounting works better, but full price does work. It can work. As you say, since November at the moment as we record this, last month in October, BookBub did a study. They looked at the data of their users and they said that almost 75% of their users go on to buy full price books once they've discovered authors on BookBub. So there is that kind of caveat that they need to discover you first. But also they mentioned that full price to those readers is sort of $6, $7, $8. So we're talking full price, not the kind of the perhaps $3, $4 that a lot of indies are pricing at. So I think if you're advertising your full price book, which is $2.99, $1.99, $3.99, you're still going to be doing pretty well because that is going to seem like a discounted book. The full price books for them are $6, $7, $8.
Fantastic. Well, we are almost heading into another year as indie authors. And so what's ahead for you in 2019? What's your focus going to be with your author entrepreneur business?
Well, my focus largely doesn't change because as I keep saying, it's about long term. I don't think, this is the year for this, or this is the year that's going to change. I just carry on doing what I've always done and what I'll always do. But yes, you're right. I'm going to be focusing more on doing things for other authors. So I've got more books in the timeline, in the pipeline even. I should be able to get the right word, shouldn't I, being a writer? The new one's the Indie Author Checklist, which is basically it's a guide to everything from coming up with that first idea to turning that into a book, getting it written, all the things you need to consider at various stages, and then getting it launched and what happens beyond launch. So it's for new writers and for established writers. It's handy to check back because we all launch a book and forget to do some fairly vital things along the way, or there's things that we just don't realize need doing or we haven't considered. So that's the next one. I'm going to be doing a lot more of that. Unfortunately, me being me, it means I'm not going to take away from my fiction writing time to do that. So I'll still have as much fiction going on and hopefully somehow managing to find about 40 hours in a day. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that bit.
and be a dad and a husband.
Yes. Remember, I've got a family knocking about downstairs somewhere.
Fantastic. So where can people find you and everything you do online?
My website for my fiction books is adamcroft.net. I'm on Twitter at Adam Croft. Instagram, I think, is Adam Croft Books. I've got my non-fiction website, indieauthormindset.com, and there's the Indie Author Mindset Facebook group as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Adam. That was great.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Adam today and that it's given you some ideas around publishing and mindset and book marketing. And I know next Monday is Christmas Eve 2018, but there will still be a podcast because I'm dedicated. And, you know, I have so much to share with you guys. So tune in next week for tips for long-term publishing success with Mark Leslie Lefebvre, who used to be Mark from Kobo and is now Mark from Draft to Digital. And we talk about that. We also talk about Mark has a new book out, The 7 P's of Publishing Success. So we talk all about that. And I always really enjoy talking with Mark. We go back a long way. Now we've known each other for years and in person as well as online. So we have a good, honest chat. And as ever, I hope that you enjoy the conversation. So happy writing week, happy holidays, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.